From the beautiful Finger Lakes region of upstate New York, this is the Dental Lighthouse Podcast. We take questions from anyone in the dental profession and discuss what it takes to win not only in dentistry, but in life. Business, leadership, relationships, parenting, health and wellness, money management, nothing is off limits on the Dental Lighthouse Podcast. I'm Jason Tenori, your host, and have over 20 years of experience to pull from. Learn from my mistakes and let me help you collapse time so you can become the best version of yourself. This is Jason from the Dental Lighthouse Podcast. We have George from the Northeast on right now. George, how are you doing?
Great. How are you, Jason?
Better than I deserve. George, why don't you tell me a little bit about your situation? Give me some context on your practice, what position you have, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. I am a private practice owner. I'm a periodontist, and I started, I never wanted to practice as a solo, straight to forward, periodontist on a referral basis. I always wanted to have a one-stop shop, but my vision was to have multi-specialists in my practice and at the same time have a hygiene department going. I started very, very small. I took over basically a fixer-upper practice. It was a stressed practice. The owner was having a lot of health issues and going, the practice was going south very quickly and he needed to exit. I tried to help him. I tried to help him with surgical cases and also slowly took over some prosthetic cases. And it got to a point that he said, I can't do this anymore. I can't, my health is really bad and can you take over? So I took over the practice and, few months later, I had a friend who's a prosthodontist who joined, and we started with, one hygiene that was there before I was there, and one front desk and one assistant, and then the prosthodontist joined. Then after that, I had a general dentist join. Then we outgrew the space. The space next door was available. I had a three-off practice that I converted into four, but still wasn't cutting it. Space took over the space next door, and last year we renovated it, the whole area. So now I went from 1,200 square foot to 3,600 square foot. I have 10 offs. And I have an oral surgeon now. I have an endodontist and two general dentists.
Sounds like a beast of a practice. it's a lot to manage. I'm sure it's difficult.
Yes. Of course, with that comes a lot of learning curves, right? So I did work for a corporate in my life. I was an associate for about 7 years after school. And I worked, some practices corporate took over, and some I entered it. So I saw how they work. And more and more as I practice, I realized that's I see the reasoning behind what they did. For example, I have now four hygienists and when I joined the practice, they were on hourly basis. I progressively gave them raises. And now what I find is that, the hourly, and there was a period of time that I was also paying everybody through lunch, even though if they took lunch or not. And now I'm walking back step by step all these things to make it, makes sense, right? So one of the things I'm noticing is that there is a lot of inefficiency. And also, I truly believe that the hygiene team should be treated like a true provider rather than an employee. And I think that they could get compensated more. I haven't run the numbers. I don't know how to run the numbers to see, but that's my gut feeling that if they were go on some sort of a percentage or a base, they would do well. So what I would love to discuss with you, one of two topics today that I'd love to discuss is the logistics of transitioning and if you were in my shoes, how would you do it and the details involved?
Yeah, so I appreciate the context, and it sounds like you got an amazing thing going. So take a moment to kind of congratulate yourself, pat yourself on the back from everything that you've come from and where you're currently at. I hear what you're saying in terms of the hygiene compensation. You know, there's basically two models, as you know. We can pay a hygienist hourly, or we can pay them as associates, basically a percentage of production, right? Or some type of hybrid model, some type of combination of both. What I've found personally is it depends on the hygienist that we're talking about. As you know, there's some that are, let's say, complacent, and they want the security blanket of a fair hourly wage. And then there's some that are just true go-getters, type A. They really want to do what's in their best interest of the patient, the practice, and themselves. And those hygienists typically have a little bit more production generating capacity than others. So there's lots of different ways that we can do this. What we do and what we've had success with is paying our hygienists a very fair market wage as a base salary. Now, it's my fair market wage is going to be different than your fair market wage based on geography, but we offer a very fair hourly base wage, and then we offer a percentage of production or collections, however you guys want to do it, and then tally those two numbers up at the end of the month, and whatever number is more is what we end up paying the hygienist. So just to put some numbers to this situation,
yeah that would be great.
You could say in your particular area, maybe it's $50 an hour, right? You would take that $50 and you would multiply it by how many hours they work per month. Let's say 35 hours times 4.5 weeks. So let me do some math here.
Why 4.5 weeks?
Traditionally, there's 4.5 weeks in a month. If you do it over 12 months, so we can say 4 weeks. But it's going to be right around, that math is going to be right around $8,000. Okay. So that's their base pay. And then you could ultimately compare it to a percentage of the revenue that they produce. So just to do the math in my head, I'm kind of just speaking off the cuff here. If we're going to say 30% of adjusted production or 30% of collections, whatever metric you want to use, and we're going to try to be in the right ballpark here. Let's say they have a $30,000 month. You take 30% of that. That's, I believe, $9,000, right? Yeah. So you ultimately pay them the higher amount of those two. So there's, in my opinion, that system works because the hygienist has the security blanket of a fair market wage, but they also come to the realization that, you know, if I bust my ass and I really try to do what's in the best interest of the patient, the business, and myself, then I have the capabilities of producing a little bit more, and then I'm ultimately going to be compensated for that. And it could be little things, right? It's little things like, is this patient due for x-rays, right? When they're being compensated hourly, there could be the possibility that they're not as diligent about checking for things like that. But when they're being paid on a percentage of revenue, typically they're more inclined to make sure that every opportunity to generate revenue within the core values of your practice, within the core values of what you're all about, is being taken care of. So does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. If they want to sit 2 hours after the last patient to write notes or looking through charts, you're not, or if, you know, if a patient cancels, then they're more motivated to keep a personal list of activating or calling other patients as well.
Well, yes and no. Again, the type A's, the ones that are really motivated, will certainly have systems in place to try to keep their schedule full. They might have a list of overdue patients. They might be working intimately with your hygiene coordinator or someone at the front desk to help keep their schedule full. So I agree with that. The other comment that you made about staying late, you have to have systems in place to put a kibosh on that, right? So there's no reason that someone should have to stay 2 hours beyond the last appointment time. Yeah. And there's no right or wrong here, but typically anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes after the last appointment should be the ideal time to wrap up the day. And if someone is routinely staying longer than 30 minutes past their last appointment, assuming they didn't have a day that was filled with chaos, then there's a training opportunity there where you really have to do some time management investigation and help that particular person figure out how to manage their day hour by hour by hour, so they're ultimately getting out at a reasonable time.
I understand. Okay. So in did you have this set up from the get-go, or did you have to transition? And if you had to transition from an hourly model to this, how did the conversation go, and how did you logistically bring it up?
Yeah, we've okay. always had everything perfect from day one. So it's no. I have made more mistakes than I care to admit. It's an easy conversation if you're going to keep the hybrid model. If you're going to keep a base pay and add the, let's call it incentive pay or compensation due to adjusted production, right? Because it doesn't really, the hygienist really takes no risk there, because at the end of the day, even if they have a bad month, they still have their base pay to fall back on. So that's an easier conversation. If you're considering moving to a model that's strict, their compensation is strictly based on a percentage of revenue, then that's certainly a more difficult conversation. Obviously. And I think you're going to get a little bit of pushback from any of your hygienists that are, again, a little bit more complacent, a little bit more go with the flow. The hygienists that are not type A, you know, want to just grind. So I would encourage you to move to some type of hybrid model first. I think moving to a model strictly based on a percentage of revenue could be a bad idea. So some type of hybrid model first. And then after you do that for 6 months to a year, if you feel like you want to go strictly to a percentage of compensation model and get rid of the hourly, then you can certainly go. You can certainly do that. Another thing to think about is what is the percentage going to be? And you'll have to run the math on that, but it can range anywhere from 25% of adjusted production to say 35% of adjusted production. A good rule of thumb, as you know, is ideally we want hygienists to generate about 3 times their salary and revenue. 3.3 is considered gold standard, but if you participate with a lot of insurances, if you're in a market where the hygiene demand is super high and we're paying higher fees or higher compensation fees, then 3.3 can be difficult to achieve. So 3.0 is a really good standard of adjusted production to compensation. So fool around with the percentage based on that metric.
Okay. And if currently the hygiene is, let's say, 2.5 times or 2 times, something like that, then would you consider going towards the 25%? And so, for example, for sake of numbers, let's assume they get $50, right? So currently, so we keep that 50. We don't lower it. We just keep it as is. But if that 50 currently is not to a level that on average per year is, let's say, twice, you know, considering their fringe benefits, taxes, all that, because you're not talking about 50 times three, you're talking about 50 plus the payroll taxes plus benefits times three, correct?
No, we're talking about W-2 wages, right? So the benefits are a different animal. So to use simple math, if they make $50 an hour, in a perfect scenario, you'd want to see them generating at least $150 in revenue per hour.
Per hour. Yeah. Okay. So you don't count anything else. You go strictly by the power. Okay.
Correct.
And then
assuming, and I have to go back and double check, but if it is not currently at 3%, three times, then how would you would still, what would you do? In other words, if you want to go, would you still, I guess you would go towards the lower side of that percentage.
It depends, right? So the first thing I would do is start asking questions. So you mentioned 2.0 is the ratio. So assuming they get paid $50 an hour, and if the ratio is two, just doing simple math, says that they're generating $100 an hour, or roughly $800 a day. Yes. So if I were in your situation, I would be asking questions. Why are they only generating $800 a day? Is it because your fees are too low? Is it because the PPOs that you participate with, the fee schedule is too low? Is it because you have patients consistently falling out of the schedule because your confirmation protocols are not buttoned up? Is it because you don't have enough patient flow to help keep four hygienists busy? So there's a lot to unpack there. And those are some of the things that you're going to have. Those are some of the questions that you're going to have to answer to get clarity on why is the ratio what it is. Now, if your hygiene schedule is full and your fees are good and they're still generating only two times, then I would go towards probably poor diagnostics in terms of periodontal disease, right? Is everyone a bloody prophy? And if that's the case, then that would keep your ratio low. But there's so much to unpack there as to why is the ratio what it is, and it may not necessarily be something that is solely on the hygienist's shoulders.
I hear it. Okay.
I hope that helps.
Yes, that does. That definitely does.
Next, we have Samantha, who is an office manager from Texas. Samantha, welcome to the Dental Lighthouse podcast.
Thanks, Jason. How are you?
Better than I deserve. What's going on?
So I just started working at a new practice. I've been in dental for about 10 years, and the doctor I started working for doesn't believe in team meetings. And I'm trying to figure out how to get him on board with at least starting once a month.
So tell me what you've done in your dental career over the last 10 years.
I started working at the front desk just at the very beginning of my career, answering the phone, greeting patients, and then slowly worked my way up. And I recently relocated, so had to find a new position and started working with a doctor who's a great guy. As the office manager, solo doctor, we have about 12 team members. And I feel like getting everybody on the same page is one thing that he struggles with.
Yeah. 12 team members is a big team for one doctor. So I agree with you that having team meetings is a good idea. What are you hoping to accomplish via these team meetings?
To get everybody on the same page, make sure that everybody knows where we're headed, what the goals are, and what role they play in that picture.
And do you feel the current doctor doesn't do a great job of communicating that on a regular basis?
Yes and no. We definitely talk about it from time to time, but it's not something that's talked about often. So people don't necessarily know that the goals are important and why they're important. So it's hard for me to encourage people to do things when they don't really see the value coming from the owner.
100%. So I appreciate that context. So I'm a huge believer in team meetings. And as you guys get a little bit bigger in department meetings, there's a lot of benefits to team meetings, and you already rattled off most of them. The problem that we run into, especially with dentists, is there needs to be some pain that they experience before they're going to be open to change. So in their mind, they're thinking to themselves, why would I agree to a monthly team meeting if, in their opinion, everything is going fine? Like, it's just adding one more thing that I need to do. So it's going to be your job, your task, your homework is to have some conversations one-on-one with your doc and communicate to him how things could change for the better, how good things could be if we started incorporating a monthly meeting cadence. I would encourage you to reference things like possible turnover. I don't know if turnover is an issue for you now, but if you're not normally meeting with people on a monthly basis, to discuss things like core values, the vision of the practice, the goals of the practice, the roles and responsibilities of each person in the practice, then turnover is likely. Is turnover an issue for you guys?
It hasn't been since I've been there. I guess I don't know the history because I've only been with him probably 10 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that if turnover is an issue, that would certainly be a pain point that I would bring up with him. It could be revenue generating capabilities. You know, most dentists, unfortunately, are a little complacent because they make decent money. But if you guys could all get on the same page with your offerings to your patient base, with why you're offering it to your patient base, with calibration of the services that you're offering to your patient base, it will always lead to more production in the office. It could be a pain point of profitability. Perhaps you guys are generating a lot of revenue, but there's not a lot of money in the bank account at the end of the month. Why is that? Those are conversations that really need to be had, in my opinion, open in a transparent way. Dental supply bills could be out of whack. The lab bill could be out of whack. Unless you really get to the root cause of why these things are going on, you'll never make any headway on it. And the only way, in my opinion, to really figure out why it's occurring is to have open discussions with team members. And the only way to really do that is to get everyone in the room, sit them at a table, buy pizza, and just have open, honest, and transparent conversations. So you're in a tough situation, especially if the doctor's not feeling any pain at this point. Again, why would they move to agreeing to this? But based on your experience, I'm sure you could find some pain points that you could bring to the doctor and really try to sell the benefit of a regular meeting cadence with the team.
Thank you so much. That's helpful.
You're very welcome. Anything else?
I think that's it that I needed today.
Next on the Dental Lighthouse podcast, we have Matthew from California. Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. Let me know a little bit about what's going on in your world and what question you may have.
So the reason I wanted to schedule this is it's kind of more of a soft skills question. It's the new year, and I figure it's a good time to really make sure that we're focusing on culture and any sort of changes we might need in the practice. So I had a coaching call with you to talk about really getting clear with the core values. The main question I had is, once goals and core values are written down, what are your regular cadences, both for yourself and for your team, to make sure that you're reviewing them, sticking with them, and keeping the team accountable for them?
Yeah, super good question. So just to give the audience a little context, Matthew, you are a dentist, right?
Yes.
And you own the practice or are an employee in the practice?
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I own a practice. I took over in November of 2021. So I've had it for a little over 2 years now.
Awesome. So first things first, I'm super impressed that someone that's younger is focused on, you know, how you describe soft skills. You know, all too often I mentor and coach younger dentists, and all they want to do is think about how many crowns they can pump out or how can they get their hygienist to produce more revenue. And it seems like later on in life, they finally get to the point where they're like, well, maybe these quote unquote soft skills are important. Maybe it is important to have core values and have a vision and have things clearly articulated. So you're well ahead of the curve in that regard.
Go ahead. Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I will say that it's a lot of that is was forced upon me. I've had a ton of turnover, and I think for me, a lack of clarity in my leader, and therefore lack of clarity in expectations for employees. And so I've really seen how just having clear core values written out can help in a lot of different ways in the practice.
Yeah, no question, right? So that experience that you just described, you know, sometimes people can look at experiences like that and have a negative perception or a negative connotation. But you did just the opposite, right? You took that event and you said, okay, this is a gift and this is going to help me formulate what is important to me, what values I want to run this practice and this business by, and get them well defined and articulated. So props to you. So let's start from the beginning. So assuming that you have core values that you believe in, and assuming that they're well defined, which is a pretty big assumption, right? So, you know, it's easy to say one of the important core values for us is humility. Well, humility might mean something to you and something very, very different for me. So once we have the core values laid out, and once they have them well defined, to your question, it's really important to figure out how do we keep them top of mind of our team? How do we make sure that they're always, quote unquote, in your face? So we all are living by them. We're all, you know, breathing them, so to speak. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. I'll give you a few and you let me know how they land. Okay.
Yeah. Sounds good.
First and foremost, when you have formal reviews, core values need to be the number one thing that you are evaluating your team on. What we like to do is call them the rules of the house. And the first rule of the house is the core values. The second rule of the house is the roles and responsibilities of the particular position that you're in. So before any type of evaluation is being done, like an assistant's ability to make nice temporary crowns, the core values are being assessed of the employee. So at least on a quarterly basis, you're sitting down with someone and you're going through each of these core values. You're going through the definition and you're going through what your perception is with the employee on how they're doing with that particular core value. Now, we use an EOS system called the bar, and it's a plus minus system. So in a situation like humility, if someone follows your definition of humility to a T, then you would mark them as a plus. If someone clearly does not manage your definition of humility, you would mark them as a minus. And then if they're kind of on the fence, like a 50-50 thing, then it's a plus minus. But just using those core values during a formal review is a great way to keep the core value top of mind. Now, on a much more frequent basis, there's a lot of different things that you can do. You can have a core value be discussed at every morning meeting, right? So I'm not sure what your normal morning meeting agenda is, but once you get through the basics like new patients on the schedule, opportunities for same day treatment, what's the rest of the week look like, then you have a literally 2 to 3 minute section of the morning meeting where you talk about a specific core value, you recite the definition, and then you just ask open-ended questions to a specific person on your team. You know, what does that mean to you? One of our core values is when in doubt, do the right thing. And we have that core value very well defined. So you could say, you know, Amy, when in doubt, do the right thing. Help me understand what that means to you. Or Mary, when in doubt, do the right thing. When was the last time that you exhibited that behavior in your day-to-day routine? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Another great opportunity to express core values on a regular basis to the team is in recognition of that behavior being exhibited. So it could also be at morning meeting, or it could be on some type of inner office communication website that you use. It could be a GroupMe page that you guys have together as your, I'm not sure exactly how you guys communicate electronically. But give me an example of one of your core values, Matthew.
I'm sorry?
Give me an example of one of your core values.
Honesty and integrity.
Perfect. Honesty and integrity. And again, assuming that you have that pretty well defined, so your team doesn't have any ambiguity when they're trying to understand what you mean by honesty and integrity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So at morning meeting, or like I said, on some type of group messaging platform, you can recognize someone that clearly showed honesty and integrity from, say, the day before or the week before, and cite specific examples of that interaction. You know, Mary, your front desk person, went from behind the front desk and went to a patient in the waiting room, apologized that you guys were running 10 to 15 minutes behind. And instead of lying and saying something like, you know, we had an employee call in sick, that's why we're running behind. They were very honest with the patient, in an effort to be fully transparent with the patient, and told them exactly why we were running behind. So that would be an example that I personally would share with the entire team, so they understand how important the core value is to you, and they have an example of how a specific team member lived that core value out the day before. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Do you think that would be a good, does that give you some tools to use in terms of ways to make sure that the core values are always top of mind with your team?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, I guess in the initial stages, the adoption of those habits feels a little forced and maybe a little cheesy, but I guess it's, you know, that's going to be normal with anything like this, because you have to bring it up front of mind so that they get excited about it.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with you. It is cheesy until the team starts to realize how important it is to not only you, but to what you're trying to do and the culture and the practice that you're trying to grow and trying to lead. And I will assure you that once it becomes a routine thing for you and your team, you won't want to go back to any other way. There's so much clarity in having the team understand how they're expected to behave. And when you don't have that clarity, that's when the wheels start coming off. And that's when people start behaving in a way that is against what you're all about. I will also say that any type of skill, playing the piano, shooting foul shots, is always awkward at the beginning, right? And then you start to practice it on a regular basis, and it starts to become very fluid, very comfortable. The hard part is getting through the initial awkwardness of this whole process. So one of the ways that you can do that is manage expectations with your team and say, hey, look, I know, and just be transparent. This is going to be a little weird. We've never done this before, but it's really important to me. And I think it's going to be really great for you guys. We are going to talk about a specific core value every day for the next 90 days. We are going to recognize someone that's exhibited this core value behavior every day for the next 90 days. And if after 90 days you feel this was a complete waste of time, then we'll talk about scrapping it. We'll talk about maybe doing something else. But I feel very confident that by doing this every day, after 90 days, we're going to feel so great about this that we can't imagine not doing this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool. That answer your question, Matthew?
It does.
Anything?
Hey, how much time do we have left?
Anything else on your mind, brother?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, just to kind of use this same concept, we also talked about more tangible goals, like, for example, the desire to grow to the point where you have an associate, which means reverse engineering with metrics, right? Like, I have to get this many new patients and have this many active patients and, you know, be booking out to this point. How often do you, I guess how often do you revisit that? What are your cadences for reviewing those sorts of goals? Like, I mean, for example, do you just set out a time each month to sit down and review, and what exactly are you reviewing or measuring to make sure that you're still on track for those kinds of things?
Yeah, super good question. So you have to be a little selfish with this, because you own the practice and you get to dictate the vision that the practice is going to take. And having being a solo doc versus one associate versus two associates versus three versus however many, that's ultimately your decision. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I want to make sure that you realize you have permission to pivot on that as well. So sitting down, the way I do it is quarterly and redefining what you want your vision to be is super important. So if your vision is ultimately a three doctor, single location practice, awesome. Congratulations for having clarity on that vision. And then the next question is, when do I want to accomplish that by and what needs to happen month over month or quarter after quarter in order to make that happen? And as you know, there's a lot of different answers to that question. Do you have the facility for it? Do you have the team for it? Do you have the demand for it? But all of those questions are byproducts of you sitting down on a quarterly basis and reconfirming that this is the direction that you ultimately want to go. Does that make sense? You there, Matthew? Does that make sense?
Hello? Yeah. Sorry, you disappeared for a second. You said reconfirming.
Yeah, reconfirming that that's what your ultimate vision is. So once you have that, then everything else is fairly straightforward. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if I were in your situation, and again, I'm just kind of making stuff up here, Matthew, but if I was in your situation and the goal was a three doctor, single location practice, then the first hoop to jump through is landing the first doctor. So what do we have to start to do? What do we have to have in place to get that person in the building? Do we have enough treatment rooms? Do we have enough patient demand? Stuff like that.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question. Do you have, is there a more specific question in regards to that that I can help you with?
No, I think, I appreciate your answer. I think it's a lot, there isn't a whole lot of, I mean, I guess it's just like, you know, what does it look like to sit down and revisit, like just to sit down and think, and I guess like having specific steps for each goal is helpful. And I think maybe that's where my disconnect is. I just need to have more tangible steps getting to each goal.
Yeah, for sure. So how can I say this? It's simple, just not easy, right? So
yeah,
like, and you can start it even from a revenue perspective. So when you have two doctors, what's the revenue look like? What's the number of employees look like? What's the number of operatories look like? And then, like we've talked about in the past, reverse engineering from there. So literally, when you lay out these goals, put numbers on them. Don't be subjective about it. Be very objective about it. By the end of the year, I want the revenue to be this. I want the number of doctors in the practice to be this. I want the number of hygienists in the practice to be this. And then decisions that you're going to make on a weekly basis ultimately get you to that point. So I don't remember your exact situation, but facility has to be one of the things that you think about. If you don't have enough room for two doctors, then we need to start making some decisions that's going to allow you to have a bigger facility. You don't necessarily have to hire doctors right now, but you can at least start to interview them, or you can at least start to create an avatar for who is the ideal associate that you want to be in your practice with you. Those are things that you can start to do now. And then when you do have the facility, when you do have the patient demand, it becomes a lot more easy for you.
Yeah.
All right, Matthew, I really appreciate the call, and hopefully I can help you. Feel free to reach back out and we can talk this through at a deeper level, okay?
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That wraps up another episode of the Dental Lighthouse podcast. You have a choice today. Choose to be a lighthouse. Lighthouses are powerful and steadfast. They are beacons of light for others to reference when life gets turbulent. Go out into the world today and become a lighthouse for someone. Give more than you get. True joy comes from serving others. Start today. I'm Jason Tenori, your host. Thank you for listening to the Dental Lighthouse podcast. For more information, podcast show notes, or links to anything that we have discussed today, please check out our website, thedentallighthouse.com. We would love to hear from you. If you would like to get on the show, please email us at podcast@thedentallighthouse.com.